You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back to the Red Sox Precap Podcast, your podcast from the Over the Monster Podcast Network, where we recap the series that just ended, preview the series that's about to start for the Boston Red Sox. I'm your host, Keaton DeRocher, joined, as always, by Bailey Von Schneider. Bailey, glad to have you back and
glad
recapping some Red Sox.
Yeah, same. I'm glad to be back.
Awesome. Well, we got a nice, interesting little series here for the Blue Jays to recap, so let's dive on in.
Yes. So, game one, you know, not much happened for the Red Sox, a lot for, you know, that juggernaut of an offense that, you know, the Toronto Blue Jays have. The, you know, the matchup was Seabold versus Gausman, and Seabold didn't really look too sharp. You know, it was 4 2/3, seven runs, all seven earned, 9 hits, 1 walk. He did have 7 Ks, but it was it wasn't the best, but I mean, it's one of the best lineups in baseball. So for him to have gone out and had like a stellar start, I would have been like, oh, damn. But then the bullpen looked pretty decent in this one. We had Danish, Davis, Sawamura, and Robles finish it off with 3 1/3 scoreless innings. The offense really wasn't doing much. You know, they did scatter 8 hits throughout the game, 2 hit days from Verdugo, Vasquez, and Dahlbeck. So like, what did you think about Seabold's outing?
Yeah, you know, I didn't think it was that bad of an outing, to be honest. I mean, obviously the line doesn't look great. Mm-hmm. He gave up 3 homers, which is naturally going to hurt.
Yeah.
But his stuff didn't look that bad, and he had some really good at bats. Vlad Jr.'s first at bat, he struck him out on a really nasty looking slider off the plate, had him fooled. But then Vlad Jr., being the amazing mm-hmm. hitter that he is, yeah. came up in his next at-bat and took him out of the park. Like, you know, this is his first start. What do you want him to do?
Yeah.
So it was a really good lineup. It was a tough task.
It's
obviously
very tough.
It's a hitter's park, too. So it was a tall task. So I wasn't expecting a lot, and that's kind of what we got. But I wasn't super disappointed. You know, the stuff that I saw, I'm interested to see him come back and get a start against – a lineup that isn't nearly as powerful
mm-hmm.
And see how he looks, because this is a really tough task on the road for your first start. But he had some moments where he looked like he belonged. You know, 7 strikeouts and 4 2/3. That's a pretty good sign. Only 1 walk. That part looked great. 9 hits is a lot. 3 homers is a lot. Maybe it's just 2 around the strike zone, but that's stuff that'll figure out. So, you know, overall, the line doesn't look great, but I think there was still a lot of stuff to be encouraged about.
Yeah, like going into the, you know, I think he was maybe left in a little longer, but then, you know, that's a problem because our bullpen isn't the biggest strength. So you tend to leave people in longer, even if they're getting a little shaky. But you are right. I mean, it was going up against one of the best lineups in baseball. First start of, you know, 2022. It is a big task. So I'm not discouraged by any stretch either, really.
Yeah. Another piece, JBJ is wrapped up in a real bad stretch of over 25, I believe is what it's at. It might be over 26 now after his 0 for 4. And we got some questions on the Red Seat, that episode that Jake and I recorded last night about DFAing JBJ when we get back to having Jaren Duran with the team. What are your thoughts on that? Because it seems like the calls are getting louder and louder now.
I don't necessarily think a DFA. One of the people that I podcast with, Ed Hand, he brought up a pretty good showing of, like, JBJ is better at Fenway than he is on the road. He has no business being in the everyday lineup, but he is pushed there. But that this is, like, a value as a fourth outfielder because the defense is just so outstanding that you can utilize him within the idea of a matchup, utilize him more at Fenway versus, you know, anywhere else. And if you utilize him as a true fourth outfielder, there's value there. And I don't think a DFA should be something we talk about. It wouldn't be anything we were talking about if he wasn't pushed into a starter role. And that's not his fault. That's the fault. No, it's really nobody's fault. It's injury. And he's been pushed in there. And it's a role that at this point in his career, he's just not anymore. And that's how I feel about it. And I've had a love-hate relationship with Jackie Bradley Jr. I've loved him as a person the entirety of his career. But I've always also been frustrated. So when we, like, got rid of him, but then immediately brought him back, I just felt like I was in a fever dream. But it, like, truthfully, I was like, this can't be real. But I do think that he is a valuable fourth outfielder. So when things start to, you know, like, you piece out, like, you know, you can put the pieces back. You have Duran. To me, your best outfield is Duran, Kike, and Verdugo. And if this is your fourth outfielder, I'm damn okay with that, truthfully.
Yeah, I had the exact same reaction as you. I think his role is best fit in the fifth outfield or fourth outfield role. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think DFAing makes sense, but he's just been pushed into a role that he shouldn't be in. Mm-hmm. And when we get the pieces back, then he can fit that role and it'll be right where he belongs. So I had the exact same reaction. Game 2, Walker versus Stripling. The Red Sox got the loss. Plenty to talk about with this one. Waka, 7 innings pitched, 7 hits, 4 runs, all earned, 3 walks, only 2 strikeouts. Brazier and Schreiber followed with clean innings. Then Danish followed with 1 clean inning and then attempted a 6-out save, which did not go well. Allowed a hit and a walk and then was replaced by Hansel Robles, who lasted 4 pitches, giving up 2 hits, blowing the save, saddling Danish with the loss. There were no outs recorded in the 9th, and the Red Sox took the loss. Verdugo and Vasquez both had 2-hit days again. Ruff Snyder also had 2 hits. Story and Ruff Snyder both hit homers. So, first, thoughts on Waka.
Again, we talk about just how great this offense is that he's facing. The fact is that Michael Waka, who came into this season being people thinking your fifth starter or maybe not even making the rotation, he gets through 7 innings, giving up, I'm going to say only 4, but like only 4 against an extremely formidable lineup. He was a little dicey. It wasn't the cleanest start, but like to me, it's like you're getting innings and you were in a position where you should have won this game. So like he put you in a position to win this game. And then it was the bullpen that blew this game. So I truly have really no issues with Michael Waka having this type of a line against, you know, the Toronto Blue Jays.
I had a typo in there. It was five innings, not seven. Like, I got things mixed up the hits and the innings. But still.
Oh, okay. Still. I was going to say seven looks
kept
great.
Him in it and gave him a chance to win. Absolutely. You are correct.
It's all you can really ask for from that aspect of things and from somebody who came in being potentially your fifth starter and has stepped it up in so many other ways that, again, against one of the best lineups in this game, I have no, I cannot fault him, truthfully.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad outing. I would have liked to see more strikeouts. Mm-hmm. His team does have some swing and miss, but
yeah,
kept him in there, gave the team a chance to win, and just then we blew it.
Yeah.
Didn't have, which brings us to our follow up question. Tanner Houck unavailable for the save here. Tyler Danish going six outs for the save. Was that the right move? Should Robles had have immediately been the guy to go to in the ninth? Tom Caron after made a note of Robles' ERA in the ninth inning is over eight. So he has struggled in these high leverage situations, but at the same time, you had already gone to Schreiber, so he was off the board. I don't know who else he really could have gone to, but Danish for six seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, and it proved to be a bad idea. He did his job, in my opinion, and then you're asking him to do more than what he's maybe capable of. Robles has closing experience, whether or not, you know, you look at what the ERA was for this year. He's just been god-awful this year, and it's wild to me. He's kind of, because he was really solid at the end of 2021 for the Red Sox. Like, he was. I thought bringing him back made a lot of sense, but it's like, this is the volatility of relief pitchers. And, you know, this is why people are like, why didn't we give a ton of money to Kenley Jansen? I was like, because even Kenley Jansen, who is unfortunately dealing with a heart issue right now, he's seemingly over his career more reliable. But that's the thing. Like, there's just a volatility. Like, Kenley Jansen could have just completely sucked this year. You don't know. And that's why I like the way Chaim, for the most part, builds his bullpens, is he finds somebody like Schreiber. Danish did most of his job in this game, you know, and it just proves, it's just proved that what we talk about, the idea of somebody being unvaccinated and going into a country that requires vaccination status to be vaccinated to enter their country, which they have every right to do. I'm hashtag Team Canada on this one. So it's like, what we said was going to happen almost immediately happened, and it almost happened twice in this series.
Yep.
So it's like, it proved why you need to be a team player and step up to the plate, especially coming from the mouth of someone who said, I'll do anything for my team. You won't. You flat out lied to us. That's all you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get the six out thing is what baffles me too, because, you know, if you run into trouble, you're going to Robles, and there's so much data showing that, like, closers coming in with a clean inning often get the job done. But if they're coming in with guys already on base, they very often screw it up and allow those guys to score. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So it makes all the sense in the world to immediately go to Robles for the ninth right away.
And I thought
and not
I had.
Wait.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to finish and not wait. So
yeah, true.
It didn't make sense.
My thing is, I thought, I could be completely making this up. I thought Cora came out and said that he was going to be using Schreiber in the ninth if a save proved to be. But then it's like, so maybe if you flip the bullpen and you use these guys before and then you bring Schreiber out, you might be able to win this game. So I just felt like he used Schreiber in a way that was different from what he said he was going to do. But again, I could be totally making that up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in his defense, it was a 4-4 game when he used him in the seventh. But if it's the tie game in the seventh, I'm probably holding off.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it would be trending towards a safe situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So that's why I was like, oh, why you're using him here? But potentially I thought he was going to be the one closing games for you. So yeah, maybe utilize somebody else in that thing.
Yeah.
And you cannot say 100% unequivocally with Tanner Houck the Red Sox win, but with Tanner Houck the entire landscape of that pen is different.
Yeah.
And that's a fact. Like, that is an absolute fact.
Yeah. That also just adds a little more to it. Like you pointed out, they used Schreiber bottom of the seventh and then immediately took the lead in the top of the eighth.
And you're like,
that hurt.
Great. But then we had our final game. We did get a W. It was nice. This was This was a series that we should have, in my opinion, taken the series. But, you know, we at least salvaged that final game. We had Pivetta. He did his thing. You know, it was 6 innings pitched, 5 hits, 2 runs, both earned, 3 walks, 5 Ks. Once again, looked pretty damn solid against, again, I'm going to keep saying it, a great, great, great lineup. Then Schreiber did what Schreiber does. He followed with a nice clean inning, and then good old Ryan Brazier blew that save because we knew that was coming. And then Strom nearly blew it again in extras, but was able to hold on for the win. But in my opinion, with Strom, again, this was, he did his job and then we overused. But that's what's happening when you don't have that extra person in that pen. True. But it was a great night for the offense. You know, 2 more hits from Verdugo, including a hell of a home run. 4 hits from Franchi. He almost went 5 for 5. Like, really. So 6 of the 8 hits for the Sox were from, Verdugo and Franchi. It was great. Even with the hot offense, you know, we did leave us, apparently we left a season high 30 men on base. Could have been even, or is that from last?
That was from the last one.
Damn, all right, I thought so.
My bad. I was like, scrambling with the pre-pro and left that in there on accident.
It was all good. All sorry. Right, I was like, wait, did they do it again? I was like, whoa, I watched this game. I didn't think that. But anyways. No.
19.
All right, so they left 19 men on base, so it could have even have been more of an offensive showing. Like, they did win 6-5, but they went into the ninth. They were leading 6-3 at that point. So, you know, it was close again. It was nearly blown once more. So it's proving time and time again the value of that other person in the pen. And I think that Chaim needs to even add another person to the pen, whether that be the people at AAA that have been performing well, or you go out and you make a trade. But overall, I thought Pivetta had a great start. What did you think?
Yeah. I mean, and particularly going up against Manoah, who has just been mowing absolutely everybody down. Mm-hmm. He was really going to have to keep pace. To keep the Red Sox in it and give him a chance to win. That's exactly what he did.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of those, like, it was weird to say, but it was one of those, like, ace versus ace games where we expected a pitcher's duel, and that's what we got.
Yeah.
And Pivetta showed up and battled and went toe-to-toe with Manoah and kept pace with him. I mean, nearly identical lines for the two of them. It was tied when they both left. Manoah had an extra earned run there. So Pivetta had the upper hand on him at that point. So I was really impressed because it was a really tough lineup. It was a really tough opponent. He was going to have to put everything he had in the start. That's exactly what he did and came out on top.
Yeah, I agree completely. And now, what do you feel about the idea of Whitlock coming back into the bullpen? Because for me personally, I think I want him, we've discussed this before, I want him to be a long-term starter. I wasn't expecting it at all to happen this year. I thought he was in the pen all year, and it would have been, you know, the offseason, then you won't go into 2023. But, foreseen circumstances, because we knew, Houck wasn't vaccinated, that he had to be pushed into the rotation a little earlier. But now with the injury, I think at this point for the rest of 2023, he would be valuable in that pen. Because if you keep Houck in there, you have him and Houck. I think they still go and they add someone else. You could potentially go from having a terrible bullpen to a pretty elite bullpen by adding him back in there. Especially when you're going to be getting Sale back. And then you would have Sale, Waka, Pivetta. Then I don't know, maybe you have Hill in the rotation or not, but I also know that they're going to be having, why am I blanking on his name?
Bukowski?
Oh yeah. So like, no. Who's coming in August? Big Maple.
Paxton's
going to be back in August as well. So they just have an embarrassment of like starting pitching that I think you can throw Whitlock back into the pen to help the pen for 2022, but I just don't want people to think that this is it. Like, I think he needs to be a starter, but I think it should be in 2023. Truthfully, I think he needs that full off season to prepare himself.
Yeah, I thought he should have started in the bullpen this year only because he was their best option for closer.
Mm-hmm.
I felt. And when he started in the pen, and they weren't using him as a closer because they still wanted to keep him stretched out. As like for the potential to be a starter later in the year. I didn't really get that because it's so weird to stretch guys out midseason. It's really awkward. It like you don't get to utilize guys in a way that you otherwise would. This is absolutely the way that he can best help the team now here in 2022 because he still is their best option to close unless they go get somebody else.
Yeah.
And even then, I still think I'd rather keep him in the pen for the rest of this year. I completely agree with you. I still think that he should be a starter, but it should be next year and he should be given an entire offseason. Literally, they should be like, hey, okay, here's your plan. You are a starter, so prepare this offseason like you're a starter and then start him in the rotation and let him go. Don't do this. Well, we're going to make you a reliever, but we're not actually going to really use you as a reliever. We're going to like use you in like weird long stints to piggyback off people. And then just in case we need to use you as a starter, and then we're going to use you as a starter, but then we're also going to use you as a reliever. Like that's so confusing for a dude's body, especially guys that like need the repetition like pitchers do. It was such a weird way to use him. And I'm glad that they're coming back and saying, here's your role. Here's how we're going to use you. This is going to be it for the rest of the year.
Yeah, because come, like, potentially come August, like, I'm actually not sure where Evaldi is in coming back. But by come August to, like, you know, getting your pushing your way into the pen, I mean, into, like, you know, into, you know, postseason, you have, you know, Sale, Evaldi, Paxton, Waka, and like Pivetta. And then you're even going more deeper where you're like, okay, what are we going to do with Winkowski? Is he just going to go back down to AAA? Or where are we then doing with Rich Hill? Like come August, there truly is like a logjam of starters. So I do agree that I think Whitlock for 2022 is best served in the bullpen.
Same. All right. Red Sox take 1 out of 3. Who you got for MVP?
Oh, Verdugo. He has just been looking so great lately. Like everything has just been improving and he's healthy, which I've always thought that when he hasn't played to where, you know, we might believe he has the capabilities of playing is because of injury. I think we're truly seeing that player that, you know, the Dodgers were promised and then we were promised. And I am so excited about it.
Yeah. Same. I went with Verdugo. 2 hits in every game. Plus big dinger in there. It had to be him. It's looking real hot. Looking real good.
Clutch too. Like clutch. Like he's been clutch.
All right. We'll take a quick break. Come back and preview the series against the Cubs. All right. You are up to the minute. Standings. The American League East. The Yankees still in first. 56-20. Red Sox back in second. 43-33. Half a game ahead of the Blue Jays at 42-33. 2 games ahead of the Rays at 40-34, and then the Orioles in fifth, 35-42. Now Red Sox coming to Chicago, coming to hang out with me on the north side, facing the Cubs, who are 29-46, fourth in the NL Central. Pitching matchups for this game, we got Hill versus Sampson, Winkowski versus Mills, and then TBD for the Red Sox, possibly another one for Siebold, we'll see, versus Thompson for the Cubs. How do we feel about those matchups?
I think the Red Sox have a great chance to sweep. It is embarrassing how bad the Cubs are, and it's cute how they thought they were going to be good. Like, I truly didn't understand what they were doing this offseason. Like, I don't understand what their logic was because this is the team they are right now. They are in a rebuild mode. I don't know why they went out and they did some of the things that they did. So, like, you better, I don't want to say you better sweep, but you better sweep.
Yeah, it's not a great lineup. Mm-hmm. And these pitching matchups are, I mean, really favor the Red Sox. Yes. I imagine the only, I guess, potential thing is we could see Waka there in that last game. But then about to start a series against Tampa, there's really no point in pitching Waka against the Cubs.
Makes
way more sense to pitch him against Tampa. So yeah. I imagine we'll see either a bullpen day or Siebold in that last game against the Cubs and see Waka against Tampa. The lineup, the Cubs are rolling out. Rafael Ortega leading off, Wilson Contreras, Ian Happ third, Patrick Wisdom fourth, Nico Horner fifth, Jason Hayward sixth, David Bode seventh, Alfonso Rivas eighth, Christopher Morel ninth. There is no power, a whole lot of strikeouts. They do have some speed, but they got to get on base first. So I'm not super scared about that.
Yeah, I'm glad that the Cubs won that 2016 World Series, because the team that we all thought was going to become a juggernaut just immediately imploded on itself. And now we're at this point in, you know, Cubs, you know, Cubs for the fans of the Cubs. So I'm sorry. I hope you enjoyed 2016, because it could be another 100 years.
Yeah, it's not great.
No.
Not great. What's there now? Yeah, I think that kind of covers everything. I don't think there's a whole lot more to dive into. Yeah, we both got a prediction of a sweep there. Who's your prediction for MVP?
I've loved what Franchi's been doing. I love bouncing off of that last game in Toronto. You know, like we said, these matchups really favor the Red Sox. I think we're going to get a great series from Franchi, and I'm really excited about everything that he's doing, because between Franchi and Winkowski, man, this trade's looking pretty nice for the Red Sox.
Yeah. I went with Verdugo just because we've kind of been waiting for him to get back on track.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's kind of all starting to fall in place. We've talked about on this podcast about how he's been really unlucky.
Yes.
His BABIP was super low, but his batted ball profile was really good. So we were kind of just waiting for it to all fall back into place. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of easy to piggyback off of that really, really good series he just had in Toronto. But, you know, sometimes that low-hanging fruit is worth it. So I'm gonna pick Verdugo to have another really good series and just build off of all of that great success he just had.
I would love to see it.
Heck yeah. All right. Well, that'll do it for us. Thanks for listening. We got some other great pods coming out. Hopefully you listen to the Red Seat that just came out yesterday. If not, go listen to that. What are you waiting for? It's a good one. Got the Prospect Pod that Bob does coming out, I think monthly or in some interval that's coming out. So yeah, there you go. You can find all of us at Over the Monster, where we write stuff. And you can find me on Twitter at Spoken Keats. You can find Bailey at Fraulein89. That's gonna do it, and we'll catch you later in the week.